What is creativity? How does it operate? What are its parameters? What does it mean to be creative? In this series, WROELP explores the creative processes of people in different realms of life to see for ourselves.
This is Heather Rose at WROELP, Radio Free Roanoke, continuing our series on the creative process. Joining us today is Nikki Giovanni, an award-winning poet, to expound on our creative process. Hi, Nikki.
Oh, Harry, how are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure, totally.
That's so great for you to be here. I'm so honored. First, can we get a little background about yourself?
Well, I've been a writer. I've been a writer, actually, all of my life. It's been my career. And I was very fortunate to have been recruited to Virginia Tech. And I've been at Virginia. I had been at Virginia Tech for 35 years. I just retired last Monday. And I got to tell you, the funniest thing that happened was I have an old SUV. I really love it. It's my favorite car. And that car took me to school, took me to Tech every day. And I retired on Monday, actually Tuesday. And I got in to go get my coffee in the morning. The car wouldn't start. And I thought, well, automobiles don't talk, you know, but it's like the car was saying, well, you retired, and so am I. And the car would not start. I had to have someone come in and get it for me, pull it out. Something wrong with the engine. I think it's just tired. So we're going to, I don't want a new car, so we're going to have it fixed. But I thought, has that ever happened to anybody that you retire and then your car retires too?
It's an analogy for something.
Yes, it is.
So please describe the area of your creative endeavors.
Oh, I write poetry, but I also write some essays, some children. Right now, I've been really concentrating on children's literature. And my last several years at Tech, I taught children's literature. I really love it because it's it is the foundation. It's the foundation of all of the literature, the folk tales and the spirituals, the old Negro spirituals, which are also folk tales in their own way. That's a foundation. So I wanted my students to learn those, to learn the foundations, to learn how we tell, how those who did not have the ability to publish books or the ability to get books out so that people could know. I mean, now, you know, you could see what's the number one bestseller or something. But if you take away 200 years or take away, and I'm always laughing, that Little Red Riding Hood, they had no way to write a book. So they had to keep passing this story along. And I wanted my students to understand how we get the foundation in so that they could realize, okay, now I can build a story around that. I think that's important. And I think that memories, by the way, are important. Mm-hmm. And I think people underestimate their memories. And so they kind of let it go. They think, oh, this is not important. But it is. And being here in Appalachia, we have, again, stories and we have memories that have been neglected. Because there's not enough, if I may, respect for them. And I think that Appalachians should have more respect for their memories. The South does. And if you look at Mississippi, you know, you got Margaret Walker, but you have also William Faulkner. And we ought to have that kind of strong writer coming from Appalachia.
Absolutely. I interview a lot of good local talent. You included.
Thank you. But sometimes we are not the Appalachians. One of our great writers, as you know, is Ron Rash. And I think that quite a few of our writers are not as well known or taught as frequently as they should be in the way that other, you know, you say, and I couldn't agree more that you've interviewed some really important and some really strong, good writers, but they're not as well known as they should be, is my point. And so we in Appalachia need to start to fight for our voice.
That's right. Mm-hmm. I agree. Well, it's on our website, so you can check it out.
Fair enough.
Well, can you tell us about your current work?
My current book, which I'm thrilled about, is called A Library. And I'm a Knoxvillian by birth. I was born in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I spent my teenage years with my grandmother. And my grandmother lived on a street called Mulvaney. And at the top of Mulvaney, you crossed it, it was Vine Street. And right there in the corner was the Carnegie Library. So I wrote about that and going up to the library. And of course, kids today don't know something like library cards.
Because library. I still have my library card.
Yeah. Well, you're one of the few because, you know, really kids, they Google everything. And so I wanted to write about what it meant to go up to the library and spend the day there. And my librarian's name, who I remember all these, after all of these years, was Mrs. Long. And when I would come, she would say, you know, well, what are you reading this week? Because I would, you know, check a book out. And it's just so that book is being premiered at the Library of Congress at the end of this month, the 27th of this month. So I'm very excited that Dr. Hayden was interested. Dr. Hayden is, as you are aware, the head librarian of the Library of Congress. And so I'm just so thrilled that a library will make its debut there. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I would be too. Well, do you have something prepared for us?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. You would like to hear a poem?
Definitely.
I, let me wait 2 seconds.
Sure.
I'm sorry, I had to go get the book.
No worries.
I should carry it. I should remember this, but
Don't on yourself.
Very good. One of my favorite poems is a poem called Ego Tripping, because I'm always trying to create the world. And I'd like to share that.
Awesome.
I was born in the Congo. I walked to the Fertile Crescent and built the Sphinx. I designed a pyramid so tough that a star that only glows every 100 years falls into the center, giving divine perfect light. I am bad. I sat on the throne drinking nectar with Allah. I got hot and sent an ice age to Europe to cool my thirst. My oldest daughter is Nefertiti. The tears from my birth pains created the Nile. I am a beautiful woman. I gazed on the forest and burned out the Sahara Desert. With a packet of goat's meat and a change of clothes, I crossed it in 2 hours. I am a gazelle, so swift, so swift. You can't catch me. For a birthday present when he was 3, I gave my son, Hannibal, an elephant. He gave me Rome for Mother's Day. My strength flows ever on. My son, Noah, built Newark, and I stood proudly at the helm as we sailed on a soft summer day. I turned myself into myself and was Jesus. Men intoned my loving name. All praises, all praises. I am the one who would save. I sold diamonds in my backyard. My bowels deliver uranium. The filings from my fingernails are semi-precious jewels. On a trip north, I caught a cold and blew my nose, giving oil to the Arab world. I am so hip. Even my errors are correct. I sailed west to reach east and had to round off the earth as I went. The hair from my head thinned and gold was laid across 3 continents. I am so perfect, so divine, so ethereal, so surreal. I cannot be comprehended except by my permission. I mean, I can fly like a bird in the sky.
That's that's beautiful. I like that.
Thank you.
When did you write that?
1968. And I've been just really thrilled that it people still like it. People still like to hear it. But I like the idea of, well, what would the earth be? And that's where I was a history major. But what would the earth be if I had created it? Because you remember there was a time that people thought the earth was flat. And there was a big fight about that, you know, that you could go to the end of the earth. Yeah, it's stupid. But we finally,
Alive. It's still alive. There's still some flat earthers, amazingly.
I can't. I mean, they need to go up in a plane or something. They'll see. But it's really, you can see, you know, you get up 70,000 feet. You can see that the earth is round.
Yeah, you can.
As you now know, we have a meteorite that's coming very close to Earth. And I think we're trying to push it. Well, we can't destroy it because it's too big. But we're trying to just push it a couple of feet away to keep it from hitting us. So I just find that totally fascinating.
Yeah.
Of course, you just have to keep looking. I hope it's a clear day. I really do, so that people will be able to see what's coming and how we need to. Humans think that we need to push it out of our way. I'm sure that the meteorite feels that if you don't want to be hit, you need to move. So
yeah.
We'll have to see who moves.
Who has a stronger will?
Yes, indeed.
We will see.
Yes, indeed.
So, what?
I said that'll be fun because Earth gets hit, you know, by meteorites a lot. Most of them are small. And you may recall that now, a couple of years ago, some boys were playing baseball and a piece of the rock came down. They were in Texas and they sold it. No, I think they gave it, but they must have gotten some money for it, to the Johnson Space Center. And we know that we get hit frequently by meteorites. So it's going to be interesting to see who moves. That's what it's a basketball game in space.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. So how do you make the leap from the idea in your head to the art you produce?
I think that all writers, but I live in partly in the future and partly just in fantasy. And it's just like we were talking now. I just think it's interesting to think about what's out there, what life forms are in the galaxy, and how do we fit in? Because we think that we are the major life form, and I'm not so sure that that's an accurate look at things. There are other life forms out there. And I don't think Earth right now is prepared. We just aren't prepared to do it. But I'm also not sure, as any scientists think about, most of what we call Earth is water. So it's almost illogical that we call this Earth. And there may be other life forms looking at the third planet from the yellow sun who have another name for us, because most of it here is water. You can't you can't live without water. You just absolutely can't.
And so
it's kind of fun to imagine, well, what do other people call us? And how do we look to them?
Or what are aliens? That is funny. Well, I did take environmental ethics, and they was taught that, you know, to the cheetah, strength is good, you know, and that's the best thing, or fastness, you know. And they're like, we're not as fast as a cheetah, so, you know, or we're probably going to get eaten by them if, you know, we're one-on-one. So who's better, really?
I think it's, well, we won't be here like we like the dinosaurs are no longer here, but we're not really sure where the dinosaurs went. Did they just leave because they recognize, well, Earth is it's not working for us? And dinosaurs, of course, they were reptiles. So there's any number of other places that they could have decided, well, we're going someplace else. And not all the dinosaurs, but some were going to just take off and fly away.
So I'm not sure how that would be so feasible, though. They have reptilian brains, right? They can't, like, really think like humans, right?
Which is probably a good idea, because humans don't do that. We haven't done such a good idea in thinking.
No, but reptiles are we're a little bit better than reptiles, because we got the prefrontal cortex. No, we got the midbrain, and then we got the forebrain. They just have the hindbrain.
Okay. I'm not a scientist, and I don't know. I'm just saying, I think that human beings think that we're better and that we're better thought than others. And I'm not sure that we're such a good idea. I'm not sure that human beings have done with whatever it is we think is the best idea. We are afraid of snakes, but we're also afraid of people who are different from us. We are afraid of people who are different of different religions. Sometimes human beings have to stop and be a little more humble, is what I'm saying. It's time to, you know, all of us who are breathing air, and everything doesn't, because a lot of life forms are living in water.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of life forms we are now discovering, as I'm sure you know, are living under ice. So as we are having climate change, we are discovering a worm community in the Arctic at the top of Earth that has been alive God knows how long. They live under ice. So there's a lot, what I'm saying, that we don't know. And common sense says we need to be humble about how we proceed, not only on this planet, but in the galaxy, how we accept the idea of otherness. I think that that's important. And so I think that's what the writers do. I think that's what poets do. I think that that's what we all do as we're just looking at. We're saying, well, there's something else there, and I need to find a way to say hello.
That's awesome. But do you know, also, I did interview someone from the Just Space Alliance, and she's kind of talking about what you were saying about how we need to proceed ethically with the technology we have going forward in space.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very important. And as a taxpayer, it's one of my favorite ways to spend money. I think that my favorite way to spend money, of course, there are public libraries and public schools.
And yeah.
Then I would go to public hospitals.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good idea. I would rather spend, as a taxpayer, if I get to check, I would rather spend money exploring space than having people fight wars.
Oh, me too. And helping people. I like to help people too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, can you see the finished product before you start, or does it unfold as you do it?
Mostly, I think it's whatever the idea is, as the idea is fooling around in my head. That's what I see. I read a lot. And when I was teaching, which this is the first part of my life that I'm not. And so I'll have to see where we go with that. But I used to say to my students, because some people will say, you need to write every day. And I don't think that. I think you need to read every day.
Amen.
I think you need to read something every day.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I read the comics every day.
Yay.
Yeah, and I really miss them. I read Pickles. I don't know if you know Pickles.
Uh-huh. But my grandparents read the comics.
It makes your day start right. You get a cup of coffee and read Pickles, and then you're having to smile and see what they're up to. Yeah. And I think that it's important because it also gives you not an idea, but it kind of just awakens your brain in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like the advice column.
Yeah.
Well, what's a real life situation that inspired you?
Oh, I think just reading. And then back to that, I think, and I was thinking about it the other day because I was packing up my office and everything. But my mother gave me a book. Oh, gosh, you know how long? Well, you know, mommy's been dead for 13 years. And she taught third grade. But the first book she gave me was a book called Mother West Wind's Children. No, Mother West Wind. And then the second book was Mother West Wind's Children. And it was Mother West Wind was just it was where the wind blows and how. And I just loved it.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I really loved it. And that's how long ago. And my favorite book, period, is Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim. And I really
love them. Yeah, I read that in like sixth grade or something.
Yeah, no, I love
it because
she brought the community together. And I like the way she brought the community together because little Timothy was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And she needed help, and she didn't mind asking for help. And I think, again, now we're talking children's books, but one of the things that that teaches you is that if you need help, ask for it. There's no such thing as I'm not going to ask because, you know, owls don't like me. Remember, she had to go and see the owl. And, of course, owls eat mice. And so she's standing there, and she's thinking, if I go in, what will happen? But she said, Timothy needs me, and I think that the owl is honorable. So she has to go in his house because he can't see in the daytime. She has to go in to say, this is what I need. And I just like that. I like the courage that it showed. But also as she's coming out, she runs into Jeremy, who's about to get eaten by Dragon, the cat. And Jeremy needs help. And so she's like, okay, can I help Jeremy? You know, will Dragon get both of us? And so because you remember Jeremy was caught by a string. And so she got Jeremy and cut the string loose and went on. And so, you know, it's one of those, I just love that. And I wanted my kids to be able to, as I'm trying to teach them, to be able to look at the story and to see what else, what we're learning and what we are finding our courage to do. Because if she had been a little slower in helping Jeremy, Dragon would have gotten both of them. But she couldn't leave him That's what the Marines say, don't they? Mm-hmm. No man left behind. She couldn't leave him. She couldn't just say, well, I'm busy and I have my own problems. I'm going to let Jeremy go. She didn't even know his name at that point. I don't care what happens to the crow. But she did, because the crow was also something needy and something alive. So she did her share. And that's what we all try to do, isn't it? We're all trying to do.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Hopefully. Yeah. What environmental factors are demonstrated to be helpful or limiting to creative process?
I think the main factors is what you learn, what you know. And I hope repeating myself in many respects, there's no such thing as writer's block. There's only that you don't know what you want to talk about.
Well, that was my next question.
If you're having what people want to say, I've got writer's block, what you've got is you don't know what you're trying to do. So what you need to do is sit down and read a couple of more books, talk to some people. It's always good to talk to people and try to figure out what it is that you're learning. Because sometimes you're trying to write something and you don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to admit that because you've got an idea, but you can't get it to the second spot. And so you have to learn something else. Pick up a book.
That's good advice. Does your work challenge any assumptions or conventions?
I think quite a few. I think my work challenges quite a few conventions, because somehow or another, I'm always looking to put the future, which is going to be the galaxy, outer space, into the past. What have we learned, and how does this carry us? How does this carry us forward? But I don't know who will learn what from it. But I think that my work does challenge us to think. I hope it does, because it makes it interesting, and you can read it again, and then you can read it again, and every time you do, you're going to, I hope, find some little thing that I put in there that you hadn't paid much attention to before. So, yes, I hope so.
That's awesome. Do you say you considered your work layered?
Yes, I do. It is layered. And I think any, especially poets, we always have something else going on, which is why And we laugh about that. When Dr. Bolden was the head of NASA, we always talked about, well, what do you really need to take into space? He's a friend, and I really love him a lot. I mean, just a wonderful man. And I would point out, well, one of the things you have to find a way to take into space, which we haven't, is, a beer. Or I would prefer champagne, since I don't drink beer. And he said, you can't do that. I said, well, you have to find a way. And you know that you can't, because both of them will pop. You know.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we learn from the explorers going back beyond Columbus, Magellan and all of them, that if you don't have something for the men to drink, they'll kill each other. And you can look in the history, that's what they do. So we have to do that. But I said to Dr. Bolden, but the other thing that we need is what kind of book do we want? And what we want book-wise, and I'm not against novelists, so any novelist listening in, it's not personal, but we need to take poetry, because you can read poetry over and over and over again and get something out of it. You can reread a novel every now and then, but not as frequently.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important, because you can get bored in space, and you don't want people on the space shuttle or the space station, for that matter, being bored. You want them to you want their minds to be kept sharp. You want them to think something. So you need poetry. Poetry is like lyrics to a song. You take some music, because you can hear your favorite songs over and over again, and it's the same thing. And that's what you want to do.
Yeah. Well, who are some of your favorite poets that you recommend to bring in space?
Of course, Gwendolyn Brooks is one of my favorite, and Paul Laurence Dunbar. But I like so many, County Cullen. And I really do. Rita Dove, who was our poet laureate. I read almost everybody that I can. T.S. Eliot, even though I don't think, if I was having a dinner and they said you can invite a poet to dinner, I don't think it would be T.S. I don't think I would like
him. Wasn't he like a fascist or something?
yeah, he was. But then The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock is a wonderful anti-war poem.
Mm.
So, you have to separate sometimes the person from the art.
Mm.
And I think that that's kind of important. That's why I said I don't think I'd want him for dinner or something, but I do read him. And I think that it's important to not let yourself get trapped by somebody you don't like, because they're saying something, or they're painting something, or they're doing something that might be insightful.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so is risk taking a part of your creativity?
I don't know. I really don't know. And I hadn't thought about it.
Okay. So I guess...
Not recently. I mean, you know, if you go back to... It depends on how far you go. Well, that's a bad answer. I think that you have to keep going forward. So I'm very fortunate in my career that I have continued to go forward. And so, as you know, as we're sitting here having this discussion, we're talking about what the little animals do, and we're talking about what's in space. So if we were there 50 years ago, or even 60 years ago, I would have been a teenager. I would not have had this discussion because I was interested in what was going on in the United States. But we keep going forward. That's what I'm trying to say. I guess that's a bad. And so as I sit at 79 looking at where is the world going and how do we teach about that, I'm looking at a different way of talking, a different way of thinking. That's what I was saying.
Okay, so do you think we're going forward as
in, oh, yeah.
in the United States?
I definitely do. There are always going to be people that try to drag you back. I mean, that's nature. But I think that most of the people on this planet want to go forward. So whether it's whether it's United States or whether it's in parts of Europe or parts of Africa or parts of the Caribbean, I think we're all trying to go forward. It's slower than certainly I and many others wish, but we are definitely going slower. Communication is going faster, first of all, and that's wonderful that we talk to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I'm a tennis fan.
Me too.
And of course, well, we're here. We have the U.S. Open. And there was a time that we wouldn't have had all of these various people. They have people whose names now we have to now learn how to pronounce.
Yeah.
Because we have people from all over the world come to play a game together. And soccer, which is a game that the United States never had any respect for, any mm-hmm. interest in, soccer is becoming a big sport, and I think that's great. But the sport that we love so much in the United States is race car, and racing has become, racing is making its way into Europe, as you know. And then people are playing, and that's our only term, with cars, so that we're now working with cars that are going to be electronically run. I think it's all fascinating.
I thought you were going to say baseball.
Baseball better pick itself up because everybody's gotten tired of baseball. And
yeah.
Baseball was working on picking itself up. But I think the season is too long, but they didn't ask me. I remember when baseball was over and Labor Day, you played the World Series and that was it.
Yeah.
And I think money has affected sport too much, in my opinion. That,
mm-hmm.
And that's all of them. That's all, you know, no matter what the sport is. I think it'd be good to go back to a real season.
Yeah.
This is spring, it's baseball. This is fall, it's football. This is winter, you know.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll even get used to bowl, because bowling is a lot of fun.
Bowling is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I don't like football because it causes traumatic brain injuries. And
well, that's, yeah, you got a good point there, but soccer doesn't. So,
yeah.
And we call it soccer, but.
Not as much, but if you do hit your the head with the ball.
No, you're right about that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but in football, it's like kind of inherent in the sport to get the injury, you know, because you're just like, I don't know why. Just stay. Anyways.
Yeah, I think you have a good point, yeah.
Yeah, I just.
But we are, first of all, the more women get into sport, whatever the sport is, the less dangerous it becomes.
Really?
So if women started to play football would change.
Yeah, probably.
Because the tackling would have to be, of necessity, would be different. It would work everything out differently.
Yeah.
As you look at basketball, it's basketball is a lot safer now that women play it.
So, really?
I think we need to get women involved in more things. I think that would be
definitely women power.
That's the truth.
So, what do you intend to achieve through your art?
Well, I just because I love reading, I also love writing, and what I would like to do is to continue to do it. I don't know that. Achieving is a word that was good, because I don't intend to achieve. I just want to continue writing. I enjoy it, and some people enjoy reading it, and I'm glad to have the people who do. I don't think that I'll ever have a number one bestseller, and they're not going to make a movie out of a poem of mine. You know, I don't have any of those pressures. Poetry doesn't have that kind of pressure. So I don't have to have ambition in that way. I can enjoy what I do without having to be bothered with trying to please somebody that I don't know.
So. Yeah, that's bothersome. It's just kind of like a weight that's lifted.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, how has your artistic expressions changed over time?
Oh, I think that everybody grows up. You know, you're thinking one way when you're 20, and you're thinking another way when you're 40, and you're thinking another way at 60. And if you don't, there's something wrong with you, because you need to grow, and you need to learn something. And one of the things that life offers is you travel, you meet different people, and I'm a foodie, so you get to eat different foods and find out why they eat this and what. And one of the things I had always wanted to do, but he's gone, was I had wanted to travel to Vietnam with Tony Bourdain. And I was so sorry that we were trying to work it out. You know, Tony had, I think, other issues, not my business.
But
I thought, wouldn't it be great to travel with Bourdain and I'm not that athletically inclined, but I wanted to take a bicycle tour. You know, he did things
Ooh,
like,
I love my bike.
Yeah, and just go all the way down and eat with the people, because he was so good with eating with people and getting to learn people and learn what they do. And I just thought, boy, wouldn't that be great? But, you know, he's gone, so we were...
Bless his heart.
Yeah. Bless something.
Well, what has been your biggest challenges, and how have you overcome them?
I think the biggest challenge is being in control of your work. And you overcome that by not giving up. I can see why, and I understand, I don't know him, by the way, Bob Dylan and them, why they sold the rights to their songs and stuff. They probably didn't want to be bothered. But I don't want to do that. I just want to be able to write what I want to write and let the people who would like to read it, read it. And I'm just lucky. I guess I'm not ambitious. And I don't have to have that pressure on me to try to always do better and better and better, because it just makes you crazy. And you lose track of yourself. You lose track of what's important. There is a piano player. I'm a jazz fan. And there's a piano player. He's passed now. His name is McCoy Tyner. And McCoy played...
play him on the station.
Yeah, he played, piano for John Coltrane. Mm-hmm. And as John Coltrane got older, John used to do, of course, really beautiful lyrical. And the quartet, the trio and the quartet, beautiful. And then Coltrane got into another situation. I think he had cancer and the drug, you know, it was a lot of problems. And McCoy Tyner left. He left the quartet. And someone asked him, so why did you leave? Why did you leave John Coltrane? And McCoy Tyner said, I left because I couldn't hear myself, because we'd be in the studio and I couldn't hear myself. And I always liked, I mean, that I've kept that in my mind a lot. You have to be able to hear yourself. And as long as you do, then it's working. Mm. And if you can't hear yourself, if you can't see yourself, if you don't know what you're trying to do, then you need to quit. You need to go forward. You need to stop that, you know?
And read, perhaps.
Always. Always read.
Get
yourself a nice quilt, because I'm a fan of that. I have my grandmother's quilt. I have my great-grandmother's quilt.
Wow.
And just wrap your toes up and read, always.
Well, is there a message you intend to convey through your work?
Not really. No, just that life is a good idea. And I certainly recommend life. A lot of people don't, but that would be another situation. We were just talking about Tony Bourdain, but there are a lot of people that don't. But I think life's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that learning about it, continuing to keep our hearts and our minds open to the possibilities, I think that's wonderful. That's what we are all trying to do, is to live and to grow. Sure. Yeah.
Oh, what are you going to do in your retirement, you think?
Oh, gosh. Right now, I thought to retire, I said, I'm going to have lots of time on my hands. But so far, I haven't had any time. I've been doing some charity work for several different organizations. And that takes time, because when I travel, when I was younger, I could travel and do the event or the date or whatever I was doing and go on. But now I need to go at least a day ahead so that I can rest and take my, I've had cancer, so I have my pills. Yeah, well, you know, I'm still here. But now I have to have those days. So right now, even traveling, it takes more time than it should. Plus, I love the train. And I had to go up to Maine. Yeah, took a train up to Maine. Everybody said, well, a friend who we love so much, she was only 98 passed.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. But we all loved him. But I didn't want to fly up to Bar Harbor. I thought, no, I'm not going to be in a hurry. And so I went over to Washington, had a car take me over to Washington, D.C., and then I took the train from Washington up to Portland. And it was just nice because I love the train. Mm-hmm. And I love the quiet car. You sit there and I take the Acela and you can see the country pass by. And I think that slowing down is important, you know, and I need to slow down a little more. But my friends are laughing. They said, you're never home anymore. You're worse now than you used to be. And I think that's true. But I'm enjoying slowing down.
Awesome. Well, who is your greatest influence?
Oh, I think my grandmother's probably my greatest influence, because you always wanted grandmother to like. I didn't ask her permission for anything, you know, like what I should write. But I always wanted to think, if she read it, would she be pleased? And so that's a different kind of an influence, because it doesn't mean I'm trying to do like her, but it does mean I would like for her to like it. So if you're looking for someone that you want to please, I think that's an influence.
Definitely.
I think grandmother was definitely my influence.
I loved my grandmother.
Yeah.
Miss her. Yeah. Well, who are your favorite? Oh, I did ask that question. Who are your favorite artists and why?
Oh, I like spirituals. I'm really, Jesse Norman is great. And if I were not, for lack of a better word, lazy, I would go back to Macon, Georgia, which is the home of James Brown, as you know, and the home of Jesse Norman. But Mr. Brown, whom I did not know, practically invented rhythm and rock and roll, actually. And of course, Jesse Norman is an opera singer who did spirituals. And it's really funny that a little town like Macon could actually produce two very different people, but both with singing. And I really just enjoy, enjoy music. Mm-hmm. And as we were talking about John Coltrane, but I really like his lyrical period. And I like Miles Davis's lyrical period. I don't understand some of the other stuff they're doing, but maybe I'm lazy, but I want a lyric line. But I'm a poet, so poets do lyricism. And so we've gotten that. And that's who I listen to a lot. And I have a really, really, really old, it's that small. I don't know if you can see me. It's a iPad, and they don't even make them anymore. And one day, the iPad is going to die, and it just really worries me, because I've had it for about 10 years, and I have all of my favorite songs on it, and I love it. It's, I need to have them transferred mm-hmm. to my telephone, so then I can, because now everybody does everything on the telephone, which is an amazing thing to me. You know, your tickets, your medicines, everything in the world that you want is on your phone. If you lost your telephone, I don't know what would happen to you. Probably wouldn't know your name.
or where you lived.
That would be interesting, isn't it? That somebody lost their phone there, let's say in New York, and they just went to, say, get coffee, and they had their phone on, on their MasterCard, and they left their phone, and they walked out, and they were drinking their coffee and realized they didn't have the phone. And then they realized they don't know who they are. So they were looking for their phone. They forgot. They don't know their name. They don't know where they don't know who they are anymore. And so now there's somebody else going around, course, being who they are, and that person has to find that person to say, I want my phone back so I can know who I am. I think something like that would be a lot of fun.
It would be. Like it.
Yeah.
Well, what are you most proud of?
I think I've done a good job. I think I'm a pretty good writer. And I was listening to Serena Williams at her last U.S. Open, where she she retired. And that was a question that she would ask and that was asked of her. And Serena said, well, I think I'm a pretty good tennis player. And I just like that. I like the way she just handled that. Well, I'm a pretty good tennis player. I thought, yeah. And so, you know, I think I'm a pretty good writer.
I'm
very pleased with that. Yeah. Yeah. Very pleased with that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, what's the best piece of advice you've been given?
I think the best piece of advice, if it doesn't work, quit. I know everybody else always wants to say, you know, continue, fight it through. But no, if it's not working, quit. There's a reason that pencils have erasers. There is a reason. If it's not working, quit. And that is the best advice I can give anybody. Because otherwise you struggle with something that's never going to work. Whether it's a marriage, whether it's food, whether it's your weight. I don't care what it is. You can't struggle with things that if it's not working, quit. Go find what it is that you really want or really need to do. I believe that. I'm a big and I don't think of myself as a quitter. I don't quit before I know that I've lost. But once you lose, you've lost. Whether it's cancer and whatever it is, quit. There's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely nothing wrong with that.
But you got to do something else, right?
Oh, you will do something else, because if you quit fighting that which you don't want to do and which is not working, you will find something else.
Yeah.
So you're the one blocking your own future. You're the one blocking your own happiness. You're the one blocking your own possibility, because you're trying to hold on to something that you don't even care about.
Indeed. See that. Well, my last question is, what is the role of an artist in society?
Well, I think we're all artists. I think our role is to keep bringing the truth up, keep looking at truth, and keep reminding people that that is one thing we have to keep pursuing. We must keep pursuing truth. That's just incredibly important. And that's what most of us, that's what the writers do. We're the ones that we keep reminding everybody, us, ourselves and everybody else, well, there's something called truth out there, and let's go and let's proceed with trying to find it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good job. Yeah. I like that. Well, thank you for sharing your creative process with our listeners, Nikki.
Thank you. This has been a lot of fun talking to you, and you take care.
You have been listening to Nikki Giovanni, an award-winning poet, and I'm Heather Rose with Radio Free Roanoke, 95.7 FM.
This is Nikki Giovanni. You're listening to WROELP Roanoke.